Henry Ford, the man who mass-produced cars and made them affordable.
I always loved engines and machines of all kinds. I liked steam engines, and I was happy when cars were invented, but I was delighted when I was able to make cars available to everyone. I was born on a farm in Greenfield Township, Michigan, USA, on the 30th of July, 1863. I always said it would have been more appropriate if I had been born in a factory, as that is where I spent most of my life. My father, William, was born in Ireland, but came to America as an immigrant, like hundreds of thousands of other Irish people in the 1840s. The reason for this was the Great Potato Famine. The potato was one of the basic foods in Ireland, but in the summer of 1845, something went wrong, and the crop failed. The potatoes grew normally without problems, but when they were taken from the ground, they started to go black and rotten. The cause was discovered to be a type of fungus that had come to Ireland from Mexico. Potatoes had been grown because just 1 acre of land could produce enough of them to feed a large family for a whole year. Without potatoes, there was nothing to eat, and people starved or died from what they called famine fever. This was not one disease, but several terrible diseases like cholera, dysentery, or typhus. 250,000 people died in the following 10 years, and another 2 million, like my father, left their homes and went to Britain, Canada, or the USA. My father came to Michigan, where he met my mother. Her name was Mary Littigott, and they got married and set up a small farm. They had me first, and then my 4 other brothers and sisters were born. But sadly, my mother died in 1876, when I was 13 years old. She had taught me to read and helped me develop self-discipline, and I missed her. We went to school, but educational facilities were limited to the one-room school that our village had. I had always been interested in how machines worked. When I was about 13, my father gave me a watch. The first thing I did was to take it to pieces to see how it worked. And fortunately, I was able to put it together again afterwards. In 1879, when I was 16, I decided I needed to find work and be independent. I could have worked on my father's farm, but I didn't really enjoy farm life. One day, I left the farm and walked the 14.5 kilometers to the city of Detroit. First, I worked for the Michigan Car Company, which gave me a clear understanding of how cars were built. Then I got an apprenticeship, working with different kinds of machines. I worked first with James F. Flower and Brothers, where I stayed for 2 years. And then I moved to the Detroit Dry Dock Company. From the first day, I knew my future was with machines, not animals. I also knew that machines would one day revolutionize farming. In 1882, I went back home to the farm. To help my father with some of the work, we got a Westinghouse farm engine, which used steam to power it. I still didn't much like farming. Instead, I was employed by Westinghouse to look after and clean the steam engines that other farmers in our area were using. At the same time, I studied accounting at college. My social life was also busy, as I enjoyed dancing and ice skating on our frozen lakes in winter. One day, I met a young woman called Clara Bryant. We liked spending time together, and in 1888, we got married. I earned a living by farming and also by running a sawmill, a factory where wood is cut into long, thin pieces. It was also a time when I had lots of ideas about machines and I would often bring engines or parts of engines home, where somehow they always ended up spread all over the house. This was fun, but I needed work that was more challenging, and the chance to turn some of my ideas into reality. To do that, I also needed time and money. In 1891, the Edison Illuminating Company offered me a job as an engineer, and so we moved to Detroit. I didn't know much about electricity, but I quickly learned. 2 years later, in 1893, I became the organization's chief engineer. Now that I had a steady job and money coming in regularly, I was able to continue developing my ideas by experimenting. One of these experiments was to make a petrol-powered car. This work was done at home, at weekends, and in the evenings. I was not the only person who spent his free time trying to invent a car that did not need to be pulled by horses. It was like a race to see who would invent one first. My life was already becoming very interesting, and when our son Edsel was born, I considered 1893 to be a fortunate year for me. By 1896, the Ford Quadricycle, as I called it, was ready to drive, and I did my first test drive on the 4th of June. It had two cylinders, a steel frame, and four bicycle tires. But I soon realized that I needed to do some more work on it. While I was working on the second model, I met Thomas Edison, whose company I was employed by. He encouraged me to continue with my improvements, and in 1898, a new model was ready to be launched. Making the quadricycle, however, was expensive, and I spent time looking for people who would invest in its production. A man called William H. Murphy, who had the biggest wood business in Detroit, agreed to support me. I resigned from Edison's, and in August 1899, I set up my own business, which I called the Detroit Automobile Company. However, I didn't know very much about running a company, and after a short time, I was having to deal with various problems to do with the quality and pricing of my automobiles, as cars were called then. I decided to sell the company and invest the money I had made in new ideas. At this time, I was a racing driver and had won some important races, driving a car that I had designed and built myself. Potential new business partners had seen me racing, and some of them wanted to invest in my 26-horsepower vehicle. With their financial help, I set up a second business in 1901 called the Henry Ford Company. I had the title of Chief Engineer. The following year, however, I had a serious disagreement with my investors when they brought in an outside consultant called Henry M. Leyland. This was the man who designed a car called the Cadillac. I left the company, and without me, they called it the Cadillac Automobile Company, which later became a major competitor of mine. In 1903, at the age of 40, I felt it was time to focus seriously on my business, so I started a new organization called the Ford Motor Company, which immediately started producing cars. I knew that the future for transport on land was on the roads. The railways were expanding rapidly, but only from town to town. A car, however, could go anywhere and everywhere once roads were built, but people were still mainly using the horse and cart. I realized there could be a mass market for cars. Within just a few weeks of starting business, our first Model A cars had been sold, and in less than a year, 859 cars had been bought. The Model A was an 8-horsepower engine with two cylinders, which could reach a speed of 48 kilometers an hour. It became known as the Fordmobile. In 1904, We needed a larger space to work. And we built a plant, that's what the car factories were called, in a place called Piquette Avenue. New investors, the Malcolmson Group, supported me. And over the next few years, we made constant improvements. By 1907, our Model N car was the best-selling car in the country. And we had also started selling cars in Canada and England. In 1908, I developed the Model T car. This could be used on the farm as well as on the road. And like the Model A, was an immediate success. We were making cars as fast as we could sell them. But I wanted to be able to make them even faster and to make far more of them. At that time, each car was built by hand. The car stayed in the same place until it was finished. Each worker had to come to where the car was to do their part of the construction, and it took many hours of skilled work for each car to be built. Making cars by hand was expensive, and I knew there was a better way that would reduce our production costs. I just hadn't found it yet. We also needed more space. In 1907, I bought 60 acres of land in a place called Highland Park, just outside Detroit, where I had a large factory built. I wanted it to be the best and most efficient car factory that had ever been made, and I employed both architects and company engineers to make sure we got the design right. The main architect was a man called Albert Kahn, who later became known as one of the best industrial architects. Building the plant took 2 years, because I wanted to use the profits we were making for the building costs and not to borrow money. Highland Park in the USA opened on the 1st of January 1910. And then the following year, production started in Britain. For several years, we had been looking at ways to rearrange the men and the machinery to move away from the old, slow methods of production. By 1913, we had started using assembly line production. This meant that the workers stayed in one place and the car was moved along on a moving platform. Each worker completed a small task, and then the car moved on to the next person. The production time of each car was reduced from 14 hours to 90 minutes. I felt we had achieved something amazing, and at the same time, we had created a great deal of new employment in the Detroit area. However, the new way of working was boring and not very satisfying for the workers, and they soon started to complain. In fact, many of them left. There was work for 14,000 men, but in 1 year, we had 53,000 workers passing through Highland Park. I realized I had to do something to make the job more attractive. In 1914, I introduced the $5 a day wage. This was about twice the average paid elsewhere. But paying more worked, and employees now wanted to work at the Ford Motor Company. In 1914, far away in Europe, the First World War had begun. As we learned of the death and destruction, I decided I had to try to do something to make peace. I had met a Hungarian woman called Rosika Schwimmer, who was a well-known pacifist, someone who believes that violence and war is wrong. She asked me if I would pay the expenses for an expedition to Europe. The plan was to meet in a neutral country. Norway was selected, where leaders of countries not involved in the war could discuss ways of stopping it. On the 4th of December, we set off for Europe with more than 100 other pacifists on a ship called the Oscar II. I had discussed the expedition with the American president, Mr. Wilson, to see if we could get approval and support from the government, but he refused. Our trip and the meetings that followed were unsuccessful, and I returned disappointed and upset, to the USA. Our intentions had been good, but most people thought we were foolish, and that the expedition had been a complete waste of time and money. The war continued for another 3 years. I decided to focus on making cars and developing my business. In 1915, I bought the land for the Rouge River plant in Dearborn, Michigan, and building work began 2 years later. Now, everything we needed to make cars could be brought to us by ship as well as by rail. I had bought a huge area of land so that we could expand without having to move again. There was enough space not only to make cars, but also to make all the parts that the cars themselves were made of. We were able to make our own steel, and from raw rubber that was shipped in, we made all our own tires. In the meantime, my grandson, Henry Ford II, was born in September 1917. It was a great day, and the start of a new generation. The following year, encouraged by President Wilson, I decided to enter politics and become a candidate for Senator of Michigan in the elections. I was not successful, but enough people had voted for me to stop me looking ridiculous. In the same year, I bought a local newspaper called the Dearborn Independent. In 1919, some of my investors thought that I was taking a big risk by building the Rouge River plant and doing too much in one place, and they started causing trouble for me. By this time, one in every two cars made was from my factories, and I was making a considerable profit. I decided that I did not have to listen to the investors anymore, and I bought their shares. This made me the only owner of the world's largest automobile company. I gave my son, Edsel, the title of company president, but in reality, I was in charge. By 1920, the first parts of the Rouge River plant were in production, and I was employing more than 80,000 workers. By 1921, we had produced our 5 millionth car, and by 1924, we had made 10 million. We were changing the face of America, socially and economically. More people were free to travel, and when, in 1925, the price of a car fell to $260, the average American could afford to buy one. I was convinced that our Model T was the car that people wanted. However, more expensive cars like the Chevrolet, which was more stylish and came in different colors, were becoming popular. Something I said once about the Model T had become famous. You can have any color you like, as long as it's black. My son and other senior employees began to warn me that it was time we started making a new type of car. I didn't want to listen to them, but when sales of the Model T started to fall, I had no choice. Production of the Model T ended, and we started work on a new car, which we called Model A, not to be confused with our very first Model A car. To produce the new car, we had to upgrade our machinery, which meant closing for 6 months, causing difficulties for our employees who had no job or income during that time. Model A was launched towards the end of 1927, and on reopening, we were producing 10,000 cars a day. The stock market crash in 1929, and the economic depression that followed, naturally also had an effect on the Ford Motor Company. I was forced to lower wages and reduce the amount of employees I had. I'd always been against workers' unions, as I saw them as just interfering in my business. But I made an effort to motivate my workers by reducing the working day from 9 hours to 8. However, in 1938, I had to sign an agreement with the workers' union. In the meantime, we continued to expand internationally, and we're now making vehicles in the UK, France, India, Holland, and Germany. In 1938, I was presented with a medal called the Grand Cross of the German Eagle for my efforts to make motor cars available to everyone. This was the highest medal given by Nazi Germany to foreigners. Although a similar medal was also given to the Vice President of General Motors, it caused several problems for me, as some people said that I supported the Germans against the Jews. In 1941, the USA entered the Second World War when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Despite the fact that I was against any kind of war, we started making military equipment. Previously, in 1925, I had bought a business called the Stout Metal Airplane Company, and we developed an aeroplane called the Tri-Motor. Unfortunately, the plane did not sell well, and I had to close that part of my company. However, in 1942, we started making B-24 bomber planes and produced more than 8,000 of them. As soon as the USA became involved in the war, I put all my energies into doing whatever I could to help, and I believe that we made a great contribution to our armies and our nation. While we were busy with the war, my only son died of cancer in 1943. His death greatly affected my family and our company. By the end of the war, I was unwell. I had already had a stroke in 1938 when I was 75 years old. After my son's death, I had to take over many areas of the company he had been responsible for. Now I was quite weak, and I agreed to let my grandson take over as president of the Ford Motor Company. 2 years later, I died at the age of 83 at my home in Dearborn. Looking back, I had created, with the help of many, the Ford Organization. It was a great company. It provided work and an income for thousands of employees. It had transformed travel for ordinary people and had raised the standard of living for their families. I considered myself to be part of a revolution that crossed the bridge from farm work to factory work, from the village to the city. The company had created a new mobile society and had set new standards in business and management throughout the world.